Здравствуйте! Welcome back to USSR vending machine, Soviet Union vending machine, the vending machine.
It's very powerful, good vending machine, Dan.
Best vending machine.
Mm-hmm.
We are back to talk about Star City. I'm Dan Moore, and I'm joined, as always, by my comrade, Jason Snell. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Dan. Good to be here. This is it. We've been on a run through Season 5 of For All Mankind and Season 1 of Star City, but here we are at the end.
I know. It feels like just yesterday. Well,
no.
It feels like 1971.
Yeah.
Season finale of Season 1. As of this recording, I should say we're recording a bit earlier than the season finale, you know, drops for most people. We have no news currently, I believe, about whether there is a season two or not.
I'm going to say...
My guess is yes.
It sure feels like they planned this knowing there would be a second season, because I don't know how this serves as a finale of anything.
Yeah. Some stuff happens.
Yeah, I saw somebody online who could be a rando and could be lying, but I'll just say that they probably got... This was probably one of those stealth two-season orders. Apple likes to announce renewals when shows finish their run of a season. But, you know, who knows? I don't know what the stats are like for this and how they're feeling about this versus For All Mankind, which is coming back for like one last season as well. I don't know.
It's always the challenge too, right? Because, I mean, and this is true in the publishing world, like you don't know, because of the lead times, you don't know how well the first thing will do until it's done. But like you filmed that, you know, a year ago in production, et cetera. And if you wait to see how the first thing does and it's a giant hit, then you've got to spin up production and all that stuff that's been lying kind of dormant for a year, and it takes longer to get out the door, which is why a lot of times they will buy two seasons or two books in the publishing world with the like banking. It's a hedge, right? It's like, well, if that first one is really big, we got the second one coming right after it. And if it's not, well, we, you know, sunk cost. We paid for the second
one.
And it's fine.
I mean, it's streaming TV, right? So there's the value in having a little bit of a catalog. They've got the For All Mankind like universe now. Having there's chance for resampling when For All Mankind comes back, when the second season of this comes back. And for word of mouth, I mean, like, I think this is a really good show.
I agree.
And when I hear people talk about it, I don't hear them talk about it a lot, but when I hear them talk about it, everybody also seems surprised and impressed at how good a show it is. So I think there's that aspect of it, too, which is sort of like playing Apple seems to be, at least a lot of the time, capable of playing a longer game and not afraid to make some bets, because they're thinking, they're thinking further out, big picture. And this is a group of people that they're, you know, they've been involved with creatively for quite a while for All Mankind. So I guess we'll find out. But like the one thing I'll say about this episode 8, The Wolves, by the way, is like it doesn't have an ending as far as I'm concerned. There's some things that sort of kind of resolve, but like there are other things that's literally characters are just left in places. So it does not feel like I had that question of like, is this really the season finale? That's how I felt at the end of it. But yeah. I guess it is. So
the last, I will say the very last shot is a hook, right? It did not put things to bed, but
no.
To me it's a like, oh, okay. So yeah. All right, let's get into it. Yes, this is season 1, episode 8, The Wolves. Venera, as we saw at the end of last week's episode, is headed back towards Earth, and we find out that at least Lakshmi and Sasha are still alive. They're having a chat as they come back to Earth.
Yes.
Sasha does not want to talk about Valya.
No, don't say his name.
Talk about him. Flashback time. We got some flashbacks in this episode.
Yeah, we do.
We see the fireball that we saw at the end of episode 6. But now the fire gets put out because conveniently they were depressurizing
exactly
at the same time. So the lack of oxygen snuffs the fire. However, the flight computer is fried. Sasha is pretty angry at Valya and tries to strangle him.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not great.
There's tension. There's
Not
tension
great.
In Venera.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are back at the chief designer's dacha, which is being patrolled by soldiers.
Farm life.
Visitor.
Yeah, farm nice life. Little,
he and his wife are having a good old time in retirement, except for all the patrolling soldiers.
Yeah, the threat of imminent death.
But they have a visitor.
They do.
Sergei.
It's Sergei this time, yeah.
Sergei has some news, but as the chief designer reminds him, the place is being surveilled. So he convinces the chief designer has his wife show him how you prepare your amazing dumplings.
Yeah.
She very gamely goes along with it, and Sergei writes a message in the flour that just says,
alive.
They're alive. During their little lunch on the, you know, terrace or what have you, they quietly get to talk more about it. The only other person who knows is Belikova, who, of course, relayed the message. Mm-hmm. But the problem is they can't land in the USSR, because if they do, they will all be arrested and or killed.
Yes.
So the proposal is we gotta move them, but we have to figure out how to do it without Star City knowing. We'll have to mm-hmm. adjust the entry angle because they're not going to have any more propellant.
Right.
And so we have to sort of tweak it. And they say, well, it's going to be tough because they have to change it like in a way that could be risky, and they need to find a way to communicate this. So Sergei goes to our friend Stepanov and tells him, you need to have Salyut send this information to the people on Venera and, tell them to adjust their course. And he says, Stepanov, a little cagey, but the chief designer asked for you by name.
Yeah, yeah, so good.
By name?
By name? He knows me?
He knows who I am?
Yes.
He's on board. In another flashback, Volya is using a sextant to calculate the trajectory and realizes that they're going to miss Venus because of the depressurization.
Right.
And thus they will not be able to slingshot back home, and they don't have any propellant left to change the course. Not great. Sergei and Galina engage in some spycraft she's shopping at the market so she can pass a note with the math, the calculations, which yes. The chief designer has promised. And then she asks him to let the chief be, because if he gets pulled back in,
it will kill him.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah. The vegetable stand. That's really nice. So the idea here is Belikova is going to be able to transmit to them during the space station's loss of signal, when nobody can see what the space station is transmitting, which is like the most isolated you'll ever be in the Soviet Union. Right. But there's two KGB guys there. But otherwise, and so you can send this message in the blind during loss of signal and hope that they get it. And that they figure out
Star City
what
won't
they need
know
to do.
Because they can't hear you. But
exactly.
You can still talk to them because they're also in space.
And this is to adjust. This is basically to adjust their reentry so that they enter earlier, because they're going all the way to Baikonur, to Kazakhstan, to where they launched from, which is the big grassy steppe. It's a good place to land a spacecraft. And they're going to bring it. They're going to bring it in short trajectory, which it's, you know, this is obviously one of those things where their science consultants have worked on the problem and like, how do we get this to be someplace that's right on the border with the Soviet Union, and there's drama, and so they make it Finland.
I had a good flashback here to one of my favorite Cold War spy series, The Sandbaggers, in which there is a similar climactic Finland Soviet Union border crossing.
Yeah.
Because they are really close. In fact, my favorite fact is there's part of Russia that is not connected to Russia.
That's
that is
right.
Not near Finland, but it's over in
that's
Lithuania,
Kaliningrad, right?
Kaliningrad, yep.
But
it's a little tiny bit of Russia. Yeah.
But there's also and that all goes back to the Kaiser, I think, and like Poland got sectioned up, and that part they never gave back. And Finland, of course, is, I mean, Finlandization in this era, Finland is kind of a technically neutral country,
right. But
because the Soviet Union demanded that they be so, but still it is, you are out of the Soviet Union if you are across the border.
Yep.
And so that will, of course, become a big problem in this episode as we get there. But that's the idea, is they're trying to. So we have two trajectory changes here. We've got, in the past, how do they get so that they can free return around Venus? And in the present, how do we get them to land it short so that they don't land in the Soviet Union and get executed?
Yeah. Stepanov relays this mission to Belikova to handle during loss of signal while the KGB is busy having their dinner after they've been busy photographing missile sites.
Yeah.
We get a nice moment where Sasha and Lakshmi get the notes in Venera, and then Anastasia calls them on the radio. Hey, how's it going? Haven't talked to you in 9 months. And she and Sasha get a touching moment of reunion there. But, you know, she point as Sasha points out, well, if I land in Finland, like, I'll never see you again.
I'll be on the other side, but we have to do this.
Yeah, but, you know, there's no other choice. Otherwise, you'll be dead or arrested. So, not great.
Yeah.
Somebody, unfortunately for them, has detected the radio contact or the incoming probe.
I think it's just the radar. They can see that the ship is coming back.
Yeah, so they relay that to Ludmilla, and Irina oversees it over here. Yeah, and so
I love the scene with the functionaries and the apparatchiks so much.
They suggest lots of options
because it's like,
we did this.
I like the one guy who's like, wait, we send people to another planet, and I was like, no,
we didn't.
There is no glory, only shame.
Yeah.
We can replace them all. It's like, no, there was no mission. Brezhnev says there was no mission at all, which is very funny because, like, as it turns out, like, Valya is dead. Spoilers for what you already saw in the episode. Valya doesn't make it back. And so maybe they could have... I mean, it's amping up the stakes for the other two.
But they don't know that, right? Like, they at this moment, they're on incomplete information.
But they don't know this, right? Exactly. They're just trying to suppress the whole thing. And
plus, those people were traitors too, right? Because they disobeyed the order to kill him.
I suppose.
It's maybe the authoritarian state.
Maybe they say they did. It is. It doesn't have to be irrational. Petrovsky, our little up and coming dude, is like, I will go to Kazakhstan myself and take care of it
personally.
Mm-hmm.
This next scene got me for a second as confusing because you don't immediately notice, but so it's Lakshmi and Sasha are talking about their relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn that Lakshmi, her parents wanted her to marry somebody, but not, what's his name, Manu, who she eventually marries. But it turns out that they were like knew each other, but he was already married and then his wife passed away and she talks about feeling guilty about it because she feels like somehow she's responsible, even though, as they point out, like, that's bananas, but, like, you know, people have complicated beliefs. And there's a brief bit where I thought this was taking place in the present.
Yeah.
Because it's not for a few seconds and until it's like, there's a cutaway to Valya. And you're like, oh, okay, it's a flashback. But I was very confused because I was also there's this moment where you're like, what have they talked about for the last 9 months?
I think there's an establishing shot of them in Venus, but it's like, it's just a planet and they're also coming back to Earth. So
yeah,
I also was a little confused momentarily there.
I just wondered you guys have been stuck in that thing for 9 months and you're only now talking about this. Yeah. Like, anyways, yes, it's a flashback. Valya has realized the solution to the problem is they have the bathysphere, which is supposed to be the probe that they drop.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, it has engines.
So,
and we can use that to adjust the course.
A few weeks ago when he was knocking the other guy out and taking his spot in order to flee, I believe I used the phrase, how'd you like to be the first man on Venus?
Yeah, you did predict that one.
The problem is it'll be a one-way trip.
Yep, and no one else will ever know. So, yeah, his plan is he has to do this, but he has to do it manually, of course, and he is too quick and locks himself in as Sasha is getting upset and saying, we can do it. We'll find another way. But nope, there is no other way. Irina finds she's been reviewing, and again, in her ambition, she's been reviewing all the stuff to help with the Venera mission, with the recovery, and she found somebody who is basically Stepanov's watcher and says, well, he's changed his routine, and he keeps meeting with this other guy, and I wouldn't say anything about it except that guy got in trouble last year, and of course, it's Sergei. And Raskova starts to put together what is happening here. Mm-hmm. So they grab Sergei, they take him back to the chief's dacha where Irina is waiting, and he comes in to find them torturing the chief designer, which is obviously very upsetting.
He
tries to play dumb, and then eventually when they threaten to kill him, he gives everything up and says, yeah, they're going to Finland. Valya, in the little interstitial bits, fixes the trajectory and then flies off in the bathysphere down to Venus.
Yeah. So he's blowing out it's that classic, like, this happens in sci-fi stuff all the time, right? Where we're out of propellant, but we can blow out the atmosphere, blow out the air in this, or we can blow out this. In this case, it's the bathysphere. And they're using the bathysphere's thrusters, it's also a little Apollo 13, using the other craft, right, to change the trajectory, and then he disconnects and says, I'm going down to the service. Tell Tanya I love her.
Tell her I love, find her. Yeah, find her and tell her I love her. He tells Sasha earlier before he goes down, and he promises. Sergei is hauled into a, you know, a van, and he's really upset and like, I can't believe you would do this to this guy who has given everything to the country. And he gets slammed into this van only to find, hey, it's the chief.
It's the
he's
chief.
Fine.
He's
it fine. Was a double.
It was a double.
Oh.
And, he's overwhelmed with guilt.
Yeah.
And the chief designer, who is always like wise and on an even keel, he's like, no. Look at me.
This is what they do.
We sent human beings to Venus and back. Like we accomplish things. Don't like
I can't take that away from
he,
us.
I feel like he's this is the chief designer sort of like vibe is do not hold yourself responsible for things that are happening because of the totalitarian state we live in. Like you can't.
You're doing your best to operate in this and you're accomplishing amazing things under these huge pressure and these conditions, right?
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I do love his vibe in this moment because he is so understanding. I felt so bad for Sergei between this and the confession scene, like, and what we know happens to Sergei later, his history with the KGB is real bad, man. Like, he has not had the best of times with them for basically his entire life. We also have, I don't remember if he and Irina have crossed paths much, but they do here, and he kind of, you know, yells at her in this moment. And of course, they will have some, they will share some moments later on down the road. So Petrovsky is off. He's got his little camp of soldiers. He's very excited. He's rubbing his hands together and is like, well, you know, we'll find him. We don't know exactly where they're coming down, but you know, they've been on a space station a spaceship for 9 months. They're not going anywhere. And the other little general is like, fish in a barrel. Ha ha ha. Let's see. And then we have them descending, Sasha and Lakshmi coming down. Sasha's like flying the thing manually.
Yeah.
And it's intercut with Valya making the descent on Venus.
Right.
And, you know, Sasha manages to pull it. They got all these, you know, they're suffering all these G-forces, and he's trying to keep it to, you know, make sure that they can land correctly. everything's going great.
Yeah.
Except
a fighter jet fires a missile at it.
A MiG shoots a missile at them. Because Raskova is leaving nothing to chance.
Yeah, yeah. So they have to pull the chute, and who knows where they're going to land. And it's but meanwhile, Valya is the first man on Venus, as I promised. He gets to look out and see Venus. It's not.
I could not believe he survived that descent. But yeah,
yeah,
he's still alive for a moment.
Yeah, and then he looks at the picture of Tanya, and then the bathysphere implodes. But he got his moment.
I did. Did you get vibes here from the end? I guess depending on when people are listening to this, but the most recent end of For All Mankind season with Kelly, I had a very similar vibe moment here where it's like the casualties of exploration, right?
Right.
Like the people who get to these places and you know never get to report these things that they have seen.
Exactly.
But they're pushing the envelope.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, maybe they transmitted some data, but he didn't get to say, like, here's what I see or anything like that.
Yeah,
so.
I'm on Venus. Hey, Mom. So the missile has knocked them just off course. They have landed inside the Soviet Union, short of the border. Ludmilla has a task force out there with jeeps, and they're driving around looking for everybody.
Binoculars. Look at them.
Binoculars.
Where are they?
Then we get into a slightly odd little digression, which felt a little narratively expedient, where Belikova up on Salyut 1 is like, they've landed short. I need to go help them. We have an emergency descent craft.
Yeah.
And she tries to convince her two KGB guys, like, I need to go down and help them. And weirdly enough, they're like, oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Like tacitly, like, oh, yeah, it's only for emergencies. Wink.
Yes.
But also, this felt strange because we only have the earlier scene where she's hiding everything she's doing from
right.
them. And then she suddenly comes clean and they're cool with it. Like, we had the one guy who was kind of friendly and I thought like, okay, maybe. But it's the other guy. It's the stony-faced guy who's like, oh, of course, you must go help them. And I'm like, you guys are KGB operatives.
And also,
the timing.
Knowing things about space, right?
Yeah.
Like, just undocking from a space station and then getting to the point where you can return can take hours, if not days. And it, this is happening.
She's down in like 10
minutes. It's like she's parachuting down. Yeah, this part was nonsense to me.
I agree. It's very funny in parts, but it felt a bit of, it's a back solve, right?
Yeah.
Because they wanted to end at a specific place and they rewound to figure out how to make it do in a tense, you know, pacey kind of way. But I agree with you. It makes basically no sense.
No.
Because she sends herself down. Petrovsky gets the call from Tarasov. He's like, I thought you were handling this. And he's like, oh, we'll find them. He's like, no. Raskova's on
Raskova's
it.
Raskova's handling it.
Of course, she knew where they were going, and she didn't tell him. Mm-hmm. So she has politically maneuvered herself back into the lead here.
Yeah.
And Petrovsky is, I don't think we'll be hearing from him again.
No. He's on the outs.
He was outplayed.
So they do find the capsule, but we see that our landed cosmonauts are brutally trying to move with their incredibly atrophied muscles, right?
Yeah, and trying to limp through the forest just to get a couple kilometers to the Finnish border.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Anastasia's capsule. This is actually a great scene.
It is.
If it makes no sense.
Lands on a farm.
Lands on a farm.
In
the
Finland?
Russian farmers like pitchforks. You know, you know, look, what is going on? She's like, where's the border? And they're like, oh, it's 15 kilometers away. Maybe 20, says 20. The wife.
Yeah. Does that truck work?
Does that truck work? So jumps in a truck and she's off.
Oh, it's funny. It just doesn't make any sense. But yes.
It makes no sense. But it was a funny scene. Maybe 20. They're running for the border over the open field. You can see the Finnish like soldiers at the checkpoint.
Lakshmi is shot.
Lakshmi gets shot as the Soviet Union catches up. The Finns are like, come on. Belikova drives her truck in between the Soviet troops and the border and surrenders herself. Sasha is basically helps Lakshmi across into the arms of the Finnish soldiers and is then kind of deciding what to do. And he eventually surrenders himself, presumably to be with Anastasia.
Yeah.
My note here says, I hope Lakshmi's husband was sent home several months ago when they decided she was dead, because otherwise he's a hostage.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we have kind of a little epilogue-y, two little epilogue-y scenes, which are strange, where Irina is watching some kids play and listening to her daughter play piano, and then she starts playing a song that I believe is meant to be the song
that she's come undone,
her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the song from the Samizdat records,
yeah. And then we cut to Paris, where Tanya, with blonde hair, is living her best life at the grocery and the bakery and walking down the street carefree.
Followed.
Except this last shot is that she is seen by Celine, I believe her name is, who is the KGB agent
who posed as a Western agent,
to test them back in Paris,
yeah.
So blink and you miss it, other than like a camera lingering there. But that certainly feels like, well, she hasn't really escaped. They know where she is. And how is that going to play into a story?
Yeah. So we end up with Anastasia and Sasha in the hands of the Soviet authorities.
Yep.
Lakshmi, who has knowledge of the Venus mission on the Finnish side of the border.
The chief and Sergei are hauled away to some...
In the back
KGB
of a bus.
Prison, probably.
In the back of a bus. And Irina is just hanging out as her daughter plays hits of the 60s.
Yeah.
And Tanya's being followed.
And Ludmilla's back in charge.
And Ludmilla seems to have exerted herself. So I mean, as a season ender, I mean, I do have lots of questions, which is effective in that way. But it also feels really not final in the way that, like, they don't really have anything for Irina, one of our main characters, to do. She kind of doesn't do anything here.
Yeah. There's an emotional beat because she's clearly thinking about Tanya, who got away, but there's not a resolution of it.
Yeah, nor does she really do anything in this episode.
The tricky Yeah, right. Exactly. She has one bit where she basically helps Ludmilla figure out that they're, you know, talking to Sergey.
Yeah, but that's it.
That's about it. And it also feels, I mean, the trickiness is, as a prequel series, we know where some of these characters end up. And
right.
So, you know,
yeah,
we Sergey's
going to be okay.
Yeah. And we know that we even see the chief at one point. He's
yes.
not named at the time, but like he appears.
He visits Danny at Star
yeah.
City.
Yeah,
when she's being
exactly.
or wherever she's being held, I think it's or maybe it's Kazakhstan or whatever, but she's being held and the chief designer visits her,
right? Yeah, and so
we know these characters are going to make it, so that you know, but still putting them in how do they get out of this is still a fun
yes.
way to. I mean, that's a good thing about prequels sometimes is you can still play the how do they get out of that game,
right? What do they owe?
Yeah.
To whom do they owe it? Well, you know,
yeah.
Change in leadership, right? Brezhnev is probably not, you know, I don't remember when he leaves power, but it's, you know, probably not too distantly.
Well, it's 80, he in our world, he died 82, in 82.
I guess, yeah. But we don't know what the... For All Mankind world, I don't know if we know when his
I don't think we do.
Ends.
I don't think we
so
do.
They could move that around a bit.
And I mean,
or we could take a time jump too. I mean, that's also possible.
Yeah, it sounds like they're not going to do that, or at least to the same degree. But yeah, I mean, I sure hope it comes back and that they were planning a second season all along, because this is a very weird place to leave it. But I've really enjoyed it. I think it's been really good, and also distinctly, honestly, the biggest surprise for me, Dan, is I thought this would really be a Soviet For All Mankind, and it's not. Right? It's like intrigue around the Soviet space program, but it is more political and spycraft and all of that, and I'm fine with that because we already have For All Mankind. I like that it's still got some space stuff going on, but there's also all of this other intrigue around it, and I think that's logically how else could you do a story like this, but like I think they executed the whole Cold War spy vibe so well, and I know you and I both love that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I think especially because I think the whole period is well executed. Like,
yeah.
The style looks good. The production values are so good. Like, I mean, I just was thinking, even in those shots when they have Venera, like, coming back to Earth, like, the whole look of it is, it's, you know, film grainy. It's kind of color filtered. Like, it looks very 1970s. And I think that's so much one part of the fun of it is that it is very clearly set in those periods, which was one of the fun things about the early seasons of For All Mankind too, right? Where it's like the alternate historical angle. And that's one of the other fun things about this is to tell a story of, you know, spy intrigue and all of this stuff in a world that is nearly ours and in many cases intersects with ours, but is also a world of fiction where different things have happened and different, like, history proceeds in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's fascinating to me whenever they manage to hit all of those. I mean, I always think of Counterpart, right? Which is a show that you and I both really enjoyed, which is also a Cold War vibe show, even though it's not set in the Cold War, but it's a sci-fi spy, you know, story. And this kind of has to me, a vibe of that at times, because it's drawing from a lot of the same inspiration pieces. So I would love to see another season of this. I think it was very well done. I think the creative team, you know, I do wonder, you know, not to play too much inside baseball, but I do wonder if some of the suffering from the last season For All Mankind, which I think was one of its weaker seasons, was in some ways because they had a split focus, and that maybe people were, you know, working more on this than For All Mankind, or they had different people writing and stuff like that. So, but I would definitely like to see it, especially as you mentioned in a previous episode, with For All Mankind coming to an end. This is, you know, Apple's best option to like have a franchise.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's not nothing. So
no.
I hope
especially
it,
if people
I hope
are
succeeded.
Diving into the archives and looking at all the streaming, all those shows and the catalogs are important. So
yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Hope that they were planning season two all along, yeah, and that we'll get it, because I would like to see it. And also because I find I am not satisfied with this as an ending,
yes,
of anything. So yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I think it feels very much teed up to tell more story. And it would be a shame if it were cut short there.
Yeah.
But it'll probably be a little while before
I would think so.
Yeah, before we really get a chance to see more. So I assume we'll have to keep the vending machine warm.
Or cold?
Cold. Yeah. Not enough vending machine content this season. That's my
We know that in the future there will be a vending machine at Star City, but it's not one we see in this. So
yeah. Shame.
Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this run of a lot of weeks of NASA vending machine and Soviet vending machine. And I guess we'll be back for, at the very least, the last season of For All Mankind, whenever that happens. Next year, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. We'll find out.
I don't know either.
But it's been a pleasure traveling the alt history space waves with you.
Yes, indeed, comrade. It's always good to successfully make our journey to other planets, even if we can never tell anybody about it.
Indeed. And to everybody out there, thank you for listening to our podcast. We'll be back when the shows come back. And until then, just remember, Ludmilla is probably watching you right now.